Welcome, everyone, to episode 126 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we got to say goodbye to a few more teams who are either knocked out or about to be knocked out of playoff contention. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And this is our last episode on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Joining us today, as always, is my co-host, my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, Brian, you know when you're unemployed and you just kind of doze around the house for a couple of days? Yeah, so recently I've grown my hair out, as you do when you're unemployed.
Sure.
And when it's long, you have to give it a very solid comb through just to make sure there aren't any knots and whatnot. And I combed out cake, Brian. So that's how I'm doing.
That is like, that is peak adulting right there. I am that proud is, of you. That,
yeah, right? That's something. And the worst thing about it is I had cake 3 days ago. So immediately after doing that, I was like, when did I shower the last time? Okay. It's about, I should take a shower. It doesn't matter what it was. I should just take a shower right now. Just get naked, get in the shower right now.
The question is, did you then eat the cake that came out from your hair?
I'm not that desperate yet.
Good.
But I will say this, in a month from now, if no one is returning my goddamn phone calls or emails, I probably will.
Good. All right. Well, we do have an announcement to make as to where we are landing next. As we mentioned, this is our last episode with FanRag. So, Mort, do you want to do the big reveal of where we'll be hosted after this episode?
The Almighty Baller Podcast Network.
Yes. Yes. Huge shout out to Chris Axman for having us on board. We are very much looking forward to it. As we've been saying, the last couple episodes, our feeds are going to just transfer right over. So if you are subscribed to us on iTunes or more on Android, best apps for that.
Pocket Casts and Podcast Addict, Stitcher, stuff like that.
Yeah. So if you're subscribed to our feed with any of those, you should continue to get that seamlessly. Otherwise, subscribe to our feed in the next couple days because we will not be hosted on FanRag come April 1st. And then, yeah, you can find us from here on out on the Almighty Ballin' Podcast Network. So we hope you stick around with us next week because we've got our long-awaited Rookie of the Year debate coming up in the next week or so.
Your long-awaited Rookie of the Year debate. Here's the thing. Just a quick add into all this is we've tried to actually limit our podcast output a little bit. FanRag did not want us to record every single day. Not that we are going to record every single day, but it shouldn't surprise anyone now that we are going to maybe up the volume a little bit because there are, but you know, the Almighty Baller is taking a complete hands-off approach when it comes to content, you know, how often we record and put stuff out. So it's going to change. We never had like a set date. Some people told me you should have a set date, but that's just never been our style. And people seem to be okay with it. So we're just going to go that way. And sometimes we're going to post three podcasts a week, sometimes four. And I imagine during free agency, at least for the first 10 or so days, we might pump out one a day. Maybe we'll see, but it shouldn't surprise anyone. So now, you know, make sure that you check your apps pretty frequently because we're going to be there.
Yeah. During the high volume periods, draft, free agency, etc., we will be pumping out higher volume than normal, but we will be churning stuff out all summer as well, even during the dead times. So a lot to look forward to in the coming months. But
cake and hair updates and everything.
But boy, we've got to start with the bad news from, I guess, technically Thursday night, but actually Wednesday. Naturally, last episode, I was giddy because Markelle Fultz had just returned and he didn't look totally broken. And I said things were all good in Philly. And then on Markelle Fultz's second game back against the Knicks on Wednesday, his shoulder introduced himself to Joel Embiid's face. Joel Embiid's face got the wrong end of that. He suffered an orbital fracture, the Sixers announced Thursday, along with a concussion. Zach Lowe of ESPN reported, depending on the timeline after the surgery, he could be back in as few as 2 weeks, might be four. So if it's two, I mean, as far as I know, he has not undergone the surgery yet, and I don't believe he's scheduled to do so today. So hypothetically, if he did on Saturday, the playoffs start 2 weeks from Saturday. So it, even on the short end of that timetable, you know, the best case scenario is he's back game one, but you got to figure he's more likely to miss at least a game or two in the first round, if not the entire first round. So, Mort, I feel like this question probably answers itself, but what do you think the Embiid injury means for the Sixers short term? I mean, they're still, you know, they're still competing for home court advantage. They're still very much in the mix. They're a half game behind the Cavaliers, a half game ahead of the Pacers. Do you think without Embiid, you know, even in the best case scenario, he's going to be out for the rest of the regular season, do you think they still have a chance to stave off Indiana and get either home court or even push the Cavs down to number four and then move up to number three?
It's a good question. I don't know. I will say this. This, for my money, is the stretch where I might change my mind on Ben Simmons as the Rookie of the Year. We'll see. I mean, if he just comes through and carries this team for the remainder of the regular season and keeps them where they should be, that's going to change something, because I've felt for a while that he leans a lot up against Embiid because of Embiid is just so productive. So if Ben is able to take on that added volume and succeed with it and lead the team to wins, that's gonna be very crucial for him going forward and the Sixers as well. I think they're gonna be fine. I seem to recall you saying last episode that they had one of the easier schedules.
Yeah.
So that's going to help them a little bit. I have a question for you, though.
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume it was the other shoulder that Markelle Fultz used to bang into Joel Embiid and take his eye out, basically.
Right.
So let's assume there was a trade-off here. Like, let's assume that that impact just reverted Fultz, like, completely magically back to the Washington Fultz, like University of Washington Fultz.
Mm-hmm.
Would you sacrifice 3 or 4 weeks of Embiid, maybe even the rest of the season Embiid, for a Markelle Fultz having returned to college form?
I mean, in like a hypothetical situation where I don't have to contextualize the pain that Embiid is probably going through right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I won't be that cruel.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a short-term fluke injury. I said this on Twitter last night. Like, I did not expect to get 62 games out of Joel Embiid this year. And if he was going to go down, I'd much rather it be a fluke injury like this that isn't going to be a long-term issue rather than like a foot or a back injury that, you know, raises concerns about his long-term health. Like, this is just a total fluke thing that could have happened, you know, anytime. And it's not, you know, he'll be back, he'll wear a mask for a couple of weeks and he'll be fine. Like, it's not going to have long-term
ramifications. I was about to say that. Mask Embiid.
Yeah, it's gonna be God. Great.
Soro back in the house. Yeah. I'm gonna look forward to that one.
Me too. But yeah, I mean, I think as you alluded to, they do have a super easy schedule the rest of the way. They're at Atlanta on Friday, at Charlotte against Brooklyn, at Detroit. The big game is Cleveland next Friday, a home game against Cleveland. That was probably going to determine who gets the number three seed, and I'm far less optimistic about their chances without Embiid. But then afterward, against Dallas, at Atlanta, and versus Milwaukee on the final day of the regular season, at that point, you know, who knows what, but one or both teams may be resting players at that point, because we just don't know where the seedings would lay. So really, the only truly difficult matchup left was against Cleveland, and then now at Detroit's a little tougher, just because, you know, Embiid versus Drummond, you can probably play to a standstill, but I'm less optimistic about Amir Johnson's chances. But on the bright side, Mort, your boy and my boy, Rashawn Holmes, is going to get some actual playing time over these eight games. So there is that.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, but overall, like, I could be more upset about this. Like, it just doesn't... you know, I feel for Embiid. It really sucks, and like I hope like hell he's back for game one, just because of all he's been through since coming to the NBA. For them to have a season like this, and then for him to miss the playoffs, would just really suck for him. But like, the Sixers weren't gonna win the NBA title this year, so if they lose in the first round, like they very well might have lost in the first round with a healthy Embiid. Like, this is not, regardless of what happens from this point forward, this was a successful season for the Sixers. They showed the progress they needed to. They have, I mean, they are going to be one of the most attractive free agent landing spots this summer, just based on the talent they have and the amount of cap space they have. Like, it's all gravy for me at this point. Like, yeah, it would have been great if, you know, they were saying they really wanted home court advantage, and now they were saying they wanted 50 wins. They're 44-30, and they had 8 games left. So, you know, that was within reach with a hot finish to the season. But whatever. Like, if they finish 47-35, they're the number 4, the number 5 seed, and they get knocked out in the first round, that's all good, man. They won 10 games 2 years ago. Like, this is such an upgrade over that. So, best wishes to Embiid, obviously. You know, I hope the big fella heals up well, and you know, the concussion's honestly just as big of a concern for me. Like, that's the one that, if that becomes a lingering issue down the line, you know, the face is going to heal, but if he starts having repeated concussion issues, then it's a whole different story. So I don't think we're going to be seeing him on Twitter very much in the next couple weeks as he recovers, but I hope he can make it back.
Or maybe we see him more on Twitter as he recovers.
I mean, if you're recovering from a concussion, you're not supposed to be looking at, you're supposed to like stay in a dark room and not look at screens or anything like that for a while. So
yeah,
hopefully.
One thing is what the doctors
say. Yeah, right.
The other is what one does.
Yeah. Like, hopefully we don't see Embiid on Twitter very much, or I think the Sixers doctors are gonna have some words with him. All right, Mort, let's now, the rest of the episode, we're gonna continue our Bye Felicia segment. We are gonna do 3 more teams today. The Lakers we're going to start with, and then also the Hornets and the Pistons. We know neither the Hornets nor Pistons have been officially eliminated from playoff contention,
but
yeah, let's be honest, it's about to happen. I think the Hornets, I want to say Matt Moore tweeted their tragic number last night. It was like, it might have been 1 or like 2, and I think the tragic number for Detroit is 3, so it's over. So let's start let's start with the Lakers, Mort, because there was some bad injury news on that front this week as well. On Wednesday, they announced that Isaiah Thomas, after getting a second opinion on his hip, was going to undergo hip surgery Thursday. So he did do that. They announced it went successfully, and he is out for the next 4 months. Obviously, he is a free agent this summer. We have discussed in previous episodes just how his free agent prospects were limited based on how this year has gone, and just the amount of cap space around the league, and which, you know, the teams that have cap space, most of them don't need point guards.
Right.
How do you think this hip surgery is going to affect his free agent prospects, if at all?
So remember that show Ashton Kutcher used to have? Was it Punked?
Yeah, sure do.
Yeah. I would love to see that still be active just for Isaiah Thomas when he hears like a truck come like into his driveway, whatever.
Oh, no.
And like he's thinking, oh, they brought the Brink truck. And then he looks on the side and it's an ambulance, because that's sort of like his situation at this point.
That's so messed up.
Yeah, look, it's not great, Brian.
No,
it's not great. I don't think he has many suitors this year. Even our idea that we were pretty proud of ourselves, oh, he's gonna sign 1 year, $20 million,
right?
Like, right now the Lakers are probably going, yeah, $20 million for 1 year, no, that's probably a little bit too much.
Yeah.
I'm settling in nice and comfortably into the mid-level exception ballpark now.
Yep.
Which is kind of weird. I mean, look, this guy is 1 year removed from averaging 29 points and 6 assists and doing so on absolutely ridiculous efficiency. And we're talking about a guy who's going to end up probably with the mid-level exception. That's very unfortunate.
Yeah. It really, I mean, it just...
It's a very small Brink truck.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a Brink's van, one would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just
like a Brink Mercedes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's hard not to feel for the guy, right? Because, as you said, he was coming off of, like, an MVP caliber campaign last summer. And, yeah, he had the hip injury. But if he had been a free agent last summer instead of this summer, he's still probably cashing in with at least, like, 70, 80 million.
Assuming at least.
Yeah, assuming he would take it. Yeah, I mean, it sucks for the guy, and I feel bad. But, yeah, I mean, I think I just can't imagine any team being willing to commit more than 1 year to him at this point. I think he's going to have to, as you said, probably take a mid-level exception-esque like value. So, you know, somewhere in the $8.5 million range, 1 year. And then it's basically going to be a prove it year for him. And if he can prove that he's, you know, the hip is fine and that he's willing to play whatever role his team asks of him, then he might have a chance to cash in 2019, and probably not on a 4-year max deal. I mean, the max dream in all likelihood is dead forever just because, you know, he was already a terrible defensive player. It would have been a mistake to max him out regardless of the hip injury. So now I think with the hip injury, teams are just, they will be cautious with good reason. But, you know, I think he will still have a chance for one more big payday if he can come back next year. And he doesn't have to resemble the Isaiah Thomas of Boston because, you know, I just don't think there's going to be a team out there that needs him to play that role, with the possible exception of Orlando, depending on, you know, if they don't draft a point guard and if they let Aaron Gordon walk, they will have, you know, somewhere around $15 million in cap space most likely. So,
oh God, that's going to happen, isn't it?
It might. I mean, but that's like the only, I mean, we walked this down. I remember, you know, the other, when we talked about this the last time, and it was like, the Bulls are going to have space, but they have Chris Dunn. The Sixers have Ben Simmons and Fultz. The Hawks have Dennis Schroeder. The Mavs have Dennis Smith Jr. The Rockets are going to have space, or like projected to have space, but Chris Paul is going to wipe out all of it. The Kings have De'Aaron Fox. The Nets have D'Angelo Russell. Like, it's Orlando, I guess Phoenix, maybe, if they don't re-sign Elfrid Payton. But, I mean, I still think his best bet is the Lakers strike out on everyone. They're going to want to preserve cap space for 2019 because then Kawhi Leonard comes off the books, Klay Thompson, Jimmy Butler. If Paul George or LeBron sign a 1-year deal, like, you know, we don't know. Those guys could just stay in Cleveland and OKC in a 1-year deal this summer, respectively. And they could be free agents next year as well. So the Lakers, if they miss out this summer, are going to want to do what they did with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and overpay on a 1-year deal. So, yeah, maybe. You're right. Probably $20 million is no longer in play, but yeah, maybe they're just like, whatever. We're not going to use the space anyway. Take 12. But yeah, I mean, I think that's his best bet. And the Lakers, I think ESPN, I want to say it was Woj who reported this. The Lakers have said that Isaiah can, like, throughout the off season, can use their facilities to rehab. So they're going to have an information advantage over all other teams in terms of his recovery, at least up until July 1st if he takes him up on that offer. So it may be best for both sides, assuming the Lakers miss out on Paul George and Brown and all those guys. Then, you know, at least they'll know what they're getting into, whereas the other teams are going to have to put him through a very extensive medical work through before they feel comfortable committing to him.
So a Brink scooter is basically what we agree on now.
That's a good way of putting it. It really sucks though. I mean, with Embiid, prayers up to Isaiah. We hope he recovers well and gets back to his old form, because this whole situation's just really shitty for him. But more, the Lakers have a bunch of other questions at hand this summer as well. We have to start with Julius Randle, who is going to be
their best player.
Yeah, right.
I want to jump right into it because okay. That was your question on the email. Who's the Lakers' best player? I was just like, Randle. It's not even funny.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, like right now. So, okay. So, yeah, fine. We'll go there first. So, you're saying right now Julius Randle is their best player. I agree with that. Do you think he has the highest upside of anyone? Or do you think he's just has more experience than Ingram and Ball? So that's
had
why.
You asked me a year ago, I would have said no.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that he just reshaped his body this last summer and the way that he's utilizing it now, and he seems to be getting it, Brian. Like, this shot selection is just so much better than it used to be. He's more aggressive going to the basket. Like, he's actually getting to the free throw line a ton.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a wonderful playmaker. I mean, this guy is putting stuff together.
Yeah.
In a really nice way. And he's like, now he's even jamming on fools. I mean, we didn't see that before. And he's going up against shot blockers. Like, there's a confidence level there that I have not seen before. Like, granted, it's been there for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But that intrigues the hell out of me. So, I mean, I before I would have said no, it's Ingram. Now I don't want to give you an answer because I might be wrong.
I mean, it's not even been a full year because Randle was kind of like bouncing in and out of the starting lineup earlier this year. Mm-hmm. But then finally, Luke Walton just committed to him. Or I guess I don't even want to say that. I think it was Randle like started playing so well. He just didn't have a drop off. Like, he was very inconsistent throughout the first couple months of the season, and then he moved into the starting lineup right toward the end of December and just played so damn well the rest of the year that he basically forced Walton's hand. Like, you can't bench a guy who's putting up the numbers he has as a starter. He's averaging almost like around 19 points, 9 boards, 3 assists in 30 minutes as a starter over 41 games. And, you know, when he's sharing touches with so many other guys who need shots as well, those are impressive numbers. Like, it's...
Yep.
So I'm totally with you in that Randle is their best player right now. And we'll talk about what they need to... how they have to approach that in a minute. I'm still kind of team Ingram long-term, but I just think that's because I can better envision a way to build a championship contender around him. Whereas Randle, I mean, if he extends his 3-point or his range to 3-point territory, it's a little easier to see that. But otherwise, I'm still a little worried about, like, is he the best player on a title team? I don't think so, right? I mean, maybe.
Right, and Ingram is 20.
Yeah. Right, so like he has, you know, Randle wasn't putting up those numbers as a sophomore either. Mm. So, you know, I mean, you know, he was putting up pretty good numbers as a sophomore, but
no, but you're right. I mean, it's definitely a valid argument. I mean, Ingram is younger and is more productive at that age, and yeah, I mean, absolutely. What is Randle? I'm just looking 23. Mm-hmm. So there's a 3-year difference there. I mean, Ingram can make up a lot of ground in 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's not inaccurate. I will say this, I'm kind of digging that they have the 3 and 4 situation locked up. And it's just even more ironic that they're going, you know, to the free agency market looking for 3 and 4. Paul George and LeBron James. I'm just, guys, you kind of got those positions locked up already.
Right. And not even, I mean, not even counting Randle, Kyle Kuzma is also...
Like he can play both.
Yeah.
Like he's like a 3-4 or 4-3, however you want it.
Right.
And what I kind of dig is a future where Ingram starts at the 3, Randle starts at the 4, and you have Kyle backing off both forward spots. Like you have a 3-man rotation at the forward spots with each guy averaging around 30, 32 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
That could be one hell of an efficient rotation.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
exactly. So let's move into the Randle question then, Mort, because he is a restricted free agent this summer.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to get Paul George, LeBron James, and Julius Randle all on the same team, but it would basically require a team to take Luol Deng back without sending back any salary, which is not going to happen. So
no, it's
not going to happen. So if they do hit their two max plan, yeah. Randle's gone. But
unfortunately,
yeah. So I mean, let's say they're not going to, you know, one of the two. Let's say they get Paul George, but LeBron doesn't come. Do you think they? What should they do with Randle at that point? Do you think he's worth re-signing up to a max deal?
I would go as far as at least consider it to great lengths.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes out and gets an offer sheet for a max,
mm-hmm.
I would not just immediately go, well, we're not matching that. I would sit down with the entirety of the team and just, you know, the front office team and the coaching staff,
mm-hmm.
and like, you know, order pizza, a lot of pizza, because they're going to be there for a while,
yeah.
and just go through that situation, not necessarily just looking at the future cap implications, but also like, what are we looking at? Are we looking at a guy who's going to improve year on year,
mm-hmm.
or are we risking going into an Andrew Wiggins situation?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to have him tell us that he'll promise us to improve?
Right.
No.
Always a good sign.
Always a good sign. No, but they have to look at where his career projection is going,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they come to the realization, or not to the conclusion, sorry, that they don't feel secure in him becoming a max type of player.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, fine. I mean, don't match that offer sheet. I would respect the Lakers for doing either thing as long as there's a solid argument for their reasoning.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying. Because I understand that that's a pretty difficult predicament.
Mm-hmm.
You have been very vocal about, you know, in today's max market, there should only be like a handful, maybe two handfuls of players.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. I understand that the max was ridiculed for so many years. It was made a joke of, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gordon Hayward signs a max with the Charlotte, right? I mean, look, I love Gordon Hayward. He's not a max player.
Yeah.
Right. So many guys out there are not max players, but getting, and I get, oh, you know, low before like that was a lower cap, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Still, I mean, no, the max should be dedicated to the absolute top tier franchise altering superstars, because otherwise, like, every starter is going to be on a max, and right. that's just ridiculous.
Then you end up with a Blake Griffin situation. Where you
end up with a Blake Griffin situation,
yeah.
or a Portland situation where you right. think, oh, like Evan Turner is worth $72 million.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean.
Or how many?
I think, yeah, 70, I want to say.
Yeah, 70 maybe.
Whatever. Okay, yeah. Way too much, money.
Way too much, yeah.
But good for you, Evan Turner. Good for you. We're not hating on you. We're hating on your front office. Yep. I mean, I think there's a slight difference. Like, I would be more comfortable giving guys coming off of their rookie deals maxes just because they're at the 25% threshold rather than,
mm-hmm.
you know, Blake Griffin or like DeAndre Jordan, just hell no. Like, he's a 35% max guy this year. Hell no. But, you know, a guy like Otto got a max last summer. That's too much money, but, you know, I don't hate it as much as I would if the Clippers max out DeAndre Jordan, just because, like, that 5% or 10% in the difference between the guys coming off rookie deals and guys who are
right.
10 years. Like, and that's huge.
And added potential, right?
Right. I
mean, right. That was a beautiful example, like Otto Porter, because mm-hmm. we talked about him at length, and he's been better in many ways. Like, his production has increased.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing. I mean, he got better this year. So when that deal was signed, yeah, it might seem a little bit bloated, but there's nothing suggesting that he can't become even better. He's not even 25 yet.
Right. I think that,
I mean,
the problem is it's just really, it's hard to build around three max guys.
Right.
Just because you really are limited at that point, basically to the mid-level exception. Like,
mm-hmm.
even if you're building around three max guys who are all coming off their rookie deals, they're all taking up 25% of the cap. That's 75% of your cap space on three guys. Like, you just aren't going to have that much space to fill out your roster around them. So you need to either have draft picks incoming and decent ones, and then hit on those guys, or you need to get really lucky and have a Warriors or a Cavs situation where veterans are just willing to play for you for the veterans minimum, and you know you can round out your bench that way. But I mean, that's where the complication is for the Lakers too. Like, what if you're the Lakers, which would you prefer, locking in Randall now or saving that cap space for a year and, you know, hoping you can get a Kawhi or you can get a Jimmy Butler or you get a Klay Thompson in 2019? And I don't know that there's a good answer to that. Like,
with Jimmy's knees and the, you know, pretty weird Kawhi situation, why don't you just lug up Julius Randle now, who's injury free?
Well,
like, that's, I here's the thing.
Yeah, that broken leg, but that's a freak thing.
Right, but yeah, I mean, it's not a Jimmy Butler situation, right, where you don't know if his knees is going to buckle up right in a year from now, yeah, right?
In fact, we probably do know that his knees are going to explode in a year because he's playing for Tibbs again.
Yeah, that's a pretty valid argument.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Here's the thing, though. People look at Randall and they say he's like a so-so player.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's now, though.
Yeah.
In 3 years' time, as well as if he's healthy and productive and gives you 82 games a year,
mm-hmm,
like that matters. I would rather have an improving Julius Randle at 82 games a year than some big name superstar who might risk playing 40 a year,
right,
and who's significantly declining because of health issues. I mean, there is something that's why I'm saying you need to look at that situation. You need to lock yourself in a room and just make sure that situation you take is the proper one. It's also partly why I lowballed Zach LaVine last episode.
Right.
Because right. I think it would be dumb to sign players, even after the rookie contract, to big deals when they are at a high risk of actually being inefficient or ineffective or be a negative asset for a team. Mm-hmm. Julius Randle is not one of those guys. He's a positive player.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would keep him, and I know I would love Paul George there, but I've never bought into the whole free agent route, like the mm-hmm, oh, cap space will solve anything mentality. That's just dumb.
Yeah, I mean, I'm relatively convinced that Paul George will go there, but I do not think LeBron James is going to go there. So I'm with you. I think, I mean, just based on the rest of their core is really young. So like, you know, Randall aligns well with their developmental curve, which is a big thing I said about the Sixers, like throughout the last couple of years. Like, you want guys aligned with your other star pieces or who you hope to be your star pieces. You want guys aligned with a 20-year-old Brandon Ingram and a 20-year-old Lonzo Ball. So having a 23-year-old Julius Randle, they're all going to continue progressively getting better together, rather than bringing in a 30-year-old who's going to like start declining right as the other guys start going up.
Mm.
I think the two reservations with Randle, I think, will be A, the shooting range. You know, I mean, he might develop that. A lot of bigs have in the past couple of years, but
the release is good.
Yeah, it might just be they haven't, or they've told him not to go for those shots, but, you know, he's played technically 3 years because he only played 14 minutes that first year. So in those three seasons, he's taken 141 threes. He's hit 36, 25.5%. Like, that's, you need more out of a modern mm-hmm four than that. And then also defensively, he there's room for improvement there. The Lakers are 2.2 points per 100 possessions better defensively with him off the court. He, you know, he comes up with some decent blocks at times, but you want more out of him there as well. So does the offensive output outweigh that? I think there's a fair argument to that. And like, if I'm the Lakers, I mean, luckily I don't think he's going to get a max offer sheet from anywhere else. So I don't think they're going to be put to the test like that. So if I'm the Lakers and like, you know, I guess I'll ask you this as well, but if I'm the Lakers, I don't know that I give him my best offer right as free agency starts. I probably start at like 460 or 470 and then say, if you can get something better than that, by all means, you know, we'll strongly consider matching. Right, you don't tell him that, but you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah. 460 would be fair, like a fair opening bid. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the play. And then, you know, while he can't sign an offer sheet, I believe, until the moratorium lifts, which is July 6th, I want to say. So, and then they would have 48 hours to match, which would be July 8th. Hopefully by that time, God, please let LeBron James decide where he's going to play that first week. So, you know, that's, I think, the one place that could really trip them up is if they're waiting for Paul George and LeBron and those guys are taking their sweet-ass time. I could see another...
Which will happen. You know it'll happen.
Right. I could see another team swooping in and saying, oh, well, you know, it's July 6th. We're going to put the Lakers to the test. So I think that would be a pretty interesting scenario for them. So, Mort, we have joked a lot about their two max plan not working, but what if it does? Let's say LeBron James and Paul George, congratulations, Lakers fans, your dreams have come true. Paul James and Paul George and LeBron James are Lakers. It means you lost Randle, but you still have Ball, Ingram, Kuzma, Josh Hart, etc. Where does that team stack up compared to the rest of the West? The Warriors, the Rockets. Let's assume Kawhi comes back.
Well, that depends. How does it stack up? Do you mean before or after LeBron is jailed for murdering Voldemort?
Before.
Yeah. Okay, decently. Yeah. Definitely decently. In the conversation to you know, make a run for the Western Conference Finals. Afterwards, however, probably not. Probably not.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. There will always be a ceiling to that team. And I'm sorry, but you know, Voldemort is going to actually be that external presence that's going to put a ceiling on that team because he is going to be a nuisance. What was the latest thing he came up with? That Luke Walton had lost the locker room?
Yeah, he said that a couple months ago, and then they immediately ran off on like a 20-plus wins versus 10 losses.
I mean, look, there's no way, even though, you know, you can be the nicest player in the NBA, you can have a full understanding of how the media works. But at one point, if that man keeps talking, at some point this dude is going to look at Lonzo and go, you know what? I don't like you anymore because of him.
Yeah.
That's obviously entirely unfair, but that's human emotion for you.
Yeah.
I think that distraction is going to actively prevent the Lakers from going to where they want to go. So we can talk about how well they're positioned with LeBron and Paul George, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But if that dude doesn't shut the hell up, I think there will be a ceiling.
Yeah.
I think that it's easy to rusk up internal issues. And Lord knows, LeBron has been a part of internal issues before. Just look at the Cleveland before they blew it up.
Right.
Like, he's going to be annoyed and frustrated and pissed off and all those things at the same time. And that's not when you get the right LeBron James.
Yeah.
You don't... LeBron doesn't play well pissed off. He doesn't play well when it's frustration. Like, he's one of those guys who plays well when he's joyful and things are rolling and everyone is nice. And, like, he feeds off positivity.
Yep.
Voldemort, he tries to inject the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I have to ask you this question.
Yep.
Would LeBron himself be a problem in regards to Luke Walton because he's not effing Greg Popovich?
I mean, it's possible. I think Luke Walton, I think, has done an excellent job with the circumstances he's had to deal with this year.
Right. It's been amazing.
Most notably, Lonzo's father. You know, he drowned out that criticism, and then the team, like, reeled off that ridiculous stretch, and like now Voldemort looks like a dumbass even more so than usual because he said you know, Luke lost the locker room, and then the locker room rallied around Luke and like ripped off a streak that almost had them, you know, not quite in playoff contention, but they were flirting with the possibility of finishing 500 for the year. So yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question as to like, will that potential for distraction, will that dissuade LeBron James from coming? I think there's probably an argument to be made that, like, as you know, he's not in the twilight of his career just yet, but he's on the... It's weird to say he's on the downswing when he's playing so well this season, but it, you know, it's his 15th season. He is,
but it's so marginal.
Right, right. I mean, but it's like, yeah. it, age-wise, I mean, he is on the downswing. Like, he has passed his athletic prime in theory, assuming he's not a robot. So, like, does he want to play out the next couple of years going against the Warriors and the Rockets before they even get to the finals, dealing with Voldemort and all the nonsense that's associated with him? I don't know. But if he does, I mean, I still, like, if you get Bron and Paul George, you're relying on the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, basically, to find a real center. Maybe you bring back Brook Lopez. But that's still a pretty thin team overall. Like, I'm not convinced a team, even if you add LeBron and Paul George to that Lakers team, I don't think they're going to beat the Warriors or the Rockets next year. Like, I think they would be the third best in the West. I think that's probably the fair place to put them. I think they would be better than Portland, who is third now. Yeah. And then, you know, the Spurs are the Spurs. We'll see what happens with Kawhi, but they would probably continue Spursing and go back to winning 50-plus games. So I think they'd be right in that tier. But I just think the talent on Golden State and Houston is so much greater than Paul George, LeBron James, and a bunch of young kids. Like, it's no offense to that Lakers team. I mean, I think, I kind of think the best path forward for this Lakers team is to not go that route. Yeah, you can get Paul George, but, like, just continue building around the players you have. Like, you have a core with the potential to really make some noise in a couple years. But if you try to expedite that process, I don't think they're going to be able to do it.
I would agree. That's why I also said that they would compete for the Western Conference Finals, not the NBA Finals.
Right.
So, you know, this is just a sidetrack real quick, but it's because this has been stuck in my mind because we're looking at LeBron and Paul George, both obviously predominantly small forwards, right? Which is the one position that I look at Portland as the big need, and it would just seem so unfair for the Lakers to get two of them. And I just started thinking, Brian, like, should Portland just sell off every draft pick they can to get out of Myers Leonard and Evan Turner and see if they could make a play for PG-13?
But then they'd lose Nurkic.
Probably, but then you would run with CJ, Dame, PG.
Then who's your center? Zach Collins, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah. I think they're so screwed in terms of
they center. Are, right?
Yeah, I just don't think
God, they are. Around. Yeah, they really are.
Because you still damn. Have Harkless as well, like, making almost $11 million next year.
So yeah. I've been trying to find a way to get PG to Portland for the whole week. Yeah. I can't find one.
I don't think it exists, unfortunately.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's a good thought, though. All right, Moy, let's give the Lakers a rest. Let's move on to the Charlotte Hornets. And now this is the part of the podcast that's going to get a little sad because the Charlotte Hornets, I think we mentioned this on the last episode. You asked if there were, I forget who you were asking about. Oh, the Bucks. If there are any bigger disappointments than the Bucks this year. And I immediately was just like, yeah, the Charlotte Hornets are.
Well, I disagree with that, but I think it's a fair notion. I think it's a fair inclusion. I don't think this came off, like, you know, out of nowhere. I think you're totally right in that they're a major disappointment. I just think when you have Giannis,
that's worse
in that sense. But totally agree. Major, major disappointment. But it's kind of weird, though, right? They disappointed, but Dwight surprised positively.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
I know. That's the thing. Like, they added Dwight as their big play, I guess Dwight, and then they drafted Malik Monk, who we'll talk about. Dwight has played, he's gone under the radar, but he's averaging almost 17 points, 12 boards, 1.6 blocks a game. Like, he's played as well as they could have reasonably expected.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Kemba continues to do Kemba things, but it's like the rest of that supporting cast, not counting Jeremy Lamb, he just went in a tailspin. Like, Nick Batum had the elbow injury early in the year, and he has just been a shell of himself for most of the year. Marvin Williams had that breakout season, I want to say 2 years ago, and just plummeted back to earth ever since. MKG at this point kind of is who he is. I think you know.
That's the big one for me.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big one.
Yeah.
That was their chance to get, like, a franchise-altering talent.
Yeah.
And they whiffed it. And this is why you don't draft non-shooters.
Yeah. I mean, I think the league was just so different back then, in a sense. Like, you...
2012.
I know, but, like, you didn't... The Warriors hadn't come around. Like, you just didn't place as much of a premium on shooting. And MKG looked like, you know, he looked like the quintessential, I want to say 3-and-D guy, but like if he developed a 3-point shot, 3-and-D guy. But otherwise, he just looked like a multi-positional wing defender who could really be like a smothering presence against all of the, back then it was LeBron and Paul George in Indiana and Carmelo in New York, like all of the guys you're going to have to go against in the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, in retrospect, yes, they probably should have taken Bradley Beal, but or Dame, but they had Kemba. So, like, you know, look at that draft class, and Deion Waiters went 4th, Thomas Robinson went 5th, Harrison Barnes went 7th, Terrence Ross went 8th. Like, they were, they were kind of just up Schitt's Creek. Like,
they were. Yeah. They just found the shittiest one, though.
Right. They got the number 2 pick in the wrong year. In a one-player draft with Anthony Davis. But, yeah.
Oh, you can't call that a one-player draft. Dame hit.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, like...
Oh, no, you mean, like, coming in?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, no, I got you, right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because, at that point, Thomas Robinson was, like, considered a lock to be, like, a future All-Star.
Right.
I was all in on T-Rob.
Yeah, me too. God, we were dumb back then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I guess the question now for Charlotte is, after a season like this, they have $117 million, almost $118 million in guaranteed salary on the books for next season. So they have no room for external improvement outside of the mid-level exception. Kemba Walker is entering the final year of his contract. He's being paid $12 million a year. And then afterwards, he will be an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2019.
Yeah.
Do you think it's time to start shopping him?
I mean, it's been time. The thing is, though, Michael Jordan isn't exactly the best manager of a team.
Right.
He was the best player, but that doesn't necessarily translate into the front office and ownership.
Yeah.
But I will say this about Mike, which I really have dug, is that when the rumors about Kemba started coming up, he was adamant, like, no, we're not just going to ship him off for cheap. There's no way in hell. Like, we would rather keep him than trade him for scraps. So I kind of dig that mentality.
Yeah.
Having said that, the closer that Kemba is going to, like, the expiring date of his contract, the less value he has, that's a problem. And then, of course, a report came out that they were looking to attach bad deals to Kemba.
Right.
Which I'm just like, no, that should be the last thing that you do, because that would diminish the return. You're rebuilding if you trade Kemba anyway. So it doesn't matter if you have a clocked up cap space, a cap sheet. It doesn't matter. You just get whatever you can of young players and draft picks for Kemba, and then let all those guys on the roster just, you know, rot until they are off the books.
Yeah.
That's fine. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, they're going to do it. At some point, you're going to hear about a deal that sends Kemba and, like, Marvin Williams or something to somewhere, and they get, like, a protected first in return or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember we talked about this at the trade deadline, and you were still very much on this, this same platform as, like, dude, you should be able to get probably multiple first-round picks for Kemba, but if you try to attach bad salary with it, you're only going to lessen your return. Like, Charlotte needs to, if they do trade Kemba, like, Charlotte, you're screwed for a while, because you just have so many bad deals on the books. Like, Batum, I mean, he's got a player option for $27 million in 2020, 2021. There ain't no way he's turning that down. Marvin Williams, player option for $15 million next summer. MKG, $13 million next summer. All of those guys are opting in. So, like, you're you're basically kind of screwed in terms of, like, this core is not going to win a title as constructed. But you also just, you have so many bad deals on the books that you would have to pay an arm and a leg to get them off. Like, you're better off just selling Kemba for whatever you can. Because, I mean, what incentive does he have to re-sign there?
Oh, none.
Right? Like, none. I can't imagine, aside from you could offer me the most money, but, like, I can't imagine him at that age. You know, he's going to be in his prime at that point. He's going to be happy with, like, maybe. If he just really wants the most money he can, and all the power to him if that's the case. But, like, if he wants to win, Charlotte is not the place where he's going to do that. Especially once right. all these guys opt into their player options. So, if I'm Charlotte, I'm assuming he's gone next summer. I'm shopping him like hell leading up to the draft. And then I'm trying to get extra. Like, you know, the first place I would call is Orlando. Because Orlando is the type of, I mean, they have new management now. But under Rob Hennigan, he absolutely would have given up whatever pick they're going to have, number four this year, if it stands
back, right.
plus, like, something else. Like, Kemba plus, like, Evan Fournier or something.
Yeah, but if I'm a different team, I'm calling Charlotte. If I'm Indiana...
Oh, interesting.
I probably... You're going to hate me for this.
Uh-oh.
I probably dangle Miles Turner.
Wow. Really?
You know why, though? I don't think he's good. Uh-huh. Don't get me wrong. I really like Miles Turner.
Yeah.
But we're in year three. We haven't seen this explosion. Like, I think he's a little bit overhyped.
Yeah. Right.
And I have a feeling that he's going to get better, right, but maybe not as much as we think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
So it might be advisable for Indiana, while the hype is up, mm-hmm. try to cash in on it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I expected more from him this year. I'll totally cop mm-hmm. to that. So,
and he'll fit so well with Oladipo. Mm-hmm. Kemba will.
Yeah.
Like, Kemba and Oladipo in the backcourt.
That would be nasty.
That's like a Dame and CJ combo right there.
Yeah.
In the East, mind you.
Right. Yeah, that's... I had a viscerally negative reaction to it when you first mentioned it, but you could probably talk me into it depending on what else. If it was just like Kemba for Turner straight up or, you know, whatever to make the salaries work, I wouldn't give up much more than Turner. I'd say right. that. Like, I wouldn't package a draft pick with him, but...
No. Something needs to be thrown in, obviously, right. but it shouldn't be like an unprotected first rounder.
No.
In some future draft down in 2024 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all of that said, I don't think Charlotte is going to dangle Kemba because MJ just doesn't strike me as the type of owner who is like proactively looking to rebuild as he should. So I fully expect...
Well, of course not. He's going to bring in Mitch Kupchak, Brian.
Right. So I fully expect them to stand pat this summer, flatline again next year, realize they're screwed heading into the trade deadline. Maybe they sell him for like 40 cents on the dollar at that point.
Mm.
But they should try to get ahead of this thing and really start looking to trade Walker for one, and then let's talk about Jeremy Lamb, because Lamb, like Walker, is heading into the final year of his deal next year.
Yeah, he is.
Do you think, I mean, depending on how you feel about how Howard's been this year, Kemba's obviously been their best player.
Right.
But Lamb's been what? Like, at worst, their third best? Possibly even their second?
Yeah. Between second and third best player, yeah.
So... what do you think about him moving forward? Is he a guy that you try to retain if you're Charlotte? Or, like Kemba, do you say, you know, this guy...
He's going to be 26 next year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be in that same age bracket as Kemba.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to be fair to Jeremy Lamb in that sense. Mm-hmm. And he's also probably going to enter his prime next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think teams know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's pretty valuable at this point.
Yeah,
I would probably cash it as much as I could. And like, imagine if you packaged, like, because Kemba is only earning like $12 million.
Yeah,
like their combined cap hit is 19 something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you offer a package of Kemba and Jeremy Lamb, like, that's where you can include a different contract.
Yeah.
But not one that's, like, has a negative impact.
Right, right.
Like, if you go to a team and say, you know what, if we give you Kemba and Jeremy Lamb, you're a locked-in playoff team next year.
Yeah.
Like, assuming that team has some parts already.
Mm-hmm.
And the salary cap hit is not going to be major, but it does mean we want your damn picks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have one here. I just wrote my final article for FanRec. And that was a Suns piece.
Ooh, okay.
And I'm not a fan of Ryan McDonough trading his draft picks for veterans, or allegedly that's what he wants to do. Some of them, not the number one or second pick, like if they win the lottery.
Yeah. But,
so not their own pick,
mm-hmm.
but the one they acquired from Miami and Milwaukee,
yep.
respectively.
Yep.
So, but if they're going to go that route, that might not be the worst play to look at. Like,
yeah.
Charlotte. I mean, look, they have so many non-shooters as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Kemba would help so very much
in
that department, as would Jeremy Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, don't support it, but if McDonough is going to shoot himself in the foot, here's a way he could shoot it that wouldn't exactly... Have him see the foot being removed entirely. Like, he can save the foot.
Right. Yeah, and that's actually really interesting. Because they also have the 2021 first from Miami. It's unprotected, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, not sure, actually. I haven't looked that one up.
Yeah, but I think it's unprotected. Be. So, they have... I mean, the Miami and Milwaukee picks, in all likelihood, will be 15 and 16 in some order. But, I mean, unless Washington, there's a chance Washington really backslides and that Milwaukee pick doesn't convey. But John Wall should be coming back in the next couple days. So I think Washington's going to lock the six up pretty quickly.
Right. So right now they're slotted to have the 15th and the 16th.
Yeah.
So that's a fair package, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's attractive.
Especially if you throw the 2021 first in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the fun part here is, or the sad, however you choose to look at it, is like they will probably contact Charlotte and go, what about Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender or Josh Jackson? And dear Charlotte, just say no.
Yeah, yeah.
Just no.
Right.
Draft picks.
Yeah.
Just picks.
Yeah. If you could get Josh Jackson out of it.
I guess, but I still think his ceiling is limited.
Yeah.
Well, I really do.
On that Charlotte team, if he was going back to, yes.
Right, that too.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I guess you could try to get, like, TJ Warren, just because you're going to badly need a lead scorer at that point.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, there but might you be could, something you could, there.
Yeah. I think that's the one you look at.
Yeah.
If Ryan McDonough is that desperate to get H in there, mm-hmm. I mean,
no, that's actually really that would speed the timeline up for Phoenix pretty considerably.
And like if they get DeAndre Ayton, that they're not going to be sacrificing their own pick, mind you,
right.
to the listeners out there. That's very crucial. Like, no, they won't sacrifice their own pick. Their own pick right now is projected to be number one.
Yeah.
So they could get like a DeAndre Ayton or a Luka Doncic, assuming they win the lottery.
Right.
Or just end up second in the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would keep that. Then they would go into next season, theoretically, with a core, which is pretty insane.
Yeah.
Like one of DeAndre Ayton or Luka Doncic, Devin Booker, Kemba Walker, Jeremy Lamb, some of their young guys like Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, who are okay, got some potential, but not a whole lot else.
Yeah.
Maybe Josh Jackson, depending on what the deal is.
Mm-hmm.
And TJ Warren, although like he might be sent the other way. Like that's suddenly you have something there you can build on.
Yeah. And then, I mean, even if they don't win the lottery, like worst case scenario, if they finish with the best lottery odds, they would worst case fall to four.
Fourth. Yeah.
I still don't think you're dangling that pick for Kemba and Jeremy Lamb, both of whom are entering the final year of their deal. Like
I do if I get both for that pick.
Yeah, I guess if you can. I don't know though, because both of those guys could leave in a year. I guess it depends on who, like how
they have Devin Booker right there though.
Yeah, but like what's that going to do?
There's a team. Like there's a team in place, man.
Right, but like, what if they leave? Like, what if Kepa leaves? You're gonna give up 9 years of team control over the number four pick for 1 year of Kepa Walker?
Why would he leave if they're given some you know, some toys to play with there? Yeah. There's Devin Booker, there's TJ Warren, there's talent there. The problem is it's misplaced talent. It's talent that can't really shoot. Mm-hmm. But with Kemba there, you suddenly got a zone breaker, and with Kemba and Devin Booker in the same backcourt, like that's gonna change things. And then you have Elfrid Payton backing up both those spots, and assuming he's kept around, which mm-hmm. I would assume that he is. Like that's something where you can see, oh, I can see potential in sticking around. I don't think Kemba would be interested in starting all over again.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Like,
I guess it would depend on where, like, which other teams had openings at that point. But
that's true. That's true. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's at least worth, like, I'm totally with you. If they don't have to give up their own pick, 100% worth exploring. Because there's only so many young guys you could have at one time. Like, having three first rounders, they're probably going to spend one on a draft and stash guy if they don't package them to move up or dangle those as trade
right.
So like, yeah, by all means. But
all right, so you call Ryan McDonough because I don't think you appreciate what I wrote about the Sun situation in my last article.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess I'll contact Mitch Kupchak, obviously.
Yeah, right. Mitch Kupchak.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mitch Kupchak. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Huh. That should be an easy sell.
Well, Mort, speaking of people who should not be in charge of basketball decisions, let's move to the Detroit Pistons.
Mm-hmm.
So, Stan Van Gundy.
Mm-hmm.
I
was pretty psyched back then.
I probably shouldn't
have.
I mean, yeah. As a coach, I think he's fine. I'd really, unless you're Greg Popovich, I don't think you can be in charge of both personnel decisions and head coaching decisions, because
no.
Naturally those two things conflict. Like, as a coach, you want to win every game and you want short-term help. As a GM, you need to take a long-term approach and you need to realize, like, maybe I shouldn't give away all my draft picks like Doc Rivers did with the Clippers. Yeah. Or, like, maybe I shouldn't trade for Blake Griffin on the first year of a mammoth deal that's could really come back to bite me in the ass just because I really want to chase a playoff berth this year. They've got to strip the personnel duties from him this summer, right?
Yeah, they do. So, a couple things. I've decided myself that I'm going to give Blake Griffin the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to give him, like, the training camp.
Okay.
I 25 game, like, it's not gone well.
Yeah.
Let's just say that, mm-hmm. because getting him, you were thinking, like, okay, he's going to come in, he's going to be, like, the alpha male scorer. Like, he's going to be the guy who can take on the scoring load. He's not even averaging 20 a game.
Mm-hmm.
Not doing so efficiently either. So you were kind of expecting him to come in and be, like, hey, 25-12 Blake.
Yep.
Like, superstar Blake. And he's not delivered on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. Stan has deep, deep experience with big men. So I think a full training camp with Drummond being, you know, this new kind of playmaker, with Blake being in the fold full time, I think he'll have a lot of different ideas that we could see work next year. But by next trade deadline, if things don't work, blow it up.
Yeah, it sucks.
Blow the whole damn ship up.
Yeah, I mean,
but I'm just going to give them one more shot.
That's fair.
One more shot.
And because Reggie Jackson missed a bunch of this season, he recently returned. So,
yes.
I mean, in theory, you're going to have... I'm not going to call them a big three, because no. But, like, you have your top three guys all mm-hmm. healthy and playing together.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about, as you mentioned, Mort, like, one of the most exciting developments about Andre Drummond this year was the fact he, like, suddenly out of nowhere turned into this playmaker, right? Like, before mm-hmm. Blake got there, I'm pulling it up right now, he averaged almost 4 assists per game to go with 15 points and 15 rebounds and, like, a steal and a half and a block and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, I mean, Blake is averaging, what, six somewhere around six assists.
I was about to say almost six assists. More than that, 6.2. Yeah.
Yeah. So a career high for him if that were extrapolated across a full season. But Andre Drummond is now down to 1.6 assists per game.
Yeah, so, because Blake is handling the ball a lot more.
Right, which was like one of my big concerns with the trade in general was just like this new playmaking Andre Drummond is suddenly like, you know, we heading into the year we expressed concerns about him stagnating, and then like, oh shit, now he's turned into a playmaker and a, like an offensive hub, yeah. And like, oh, this actually is exciting again. And then the Blake thing kind of just stripped that away from him. So maybe to your point, Mort, maybe it's just going to take a training camp like an off season of them working out together, playing together, a training camp, yes, for Van Gundy to figure out the best way to utilize both of their playmaking skills. Because again, it's like you want as many playmakers on the floor as possible. Having too many,
I was just about to make that point,
right? Yep. Like having too many is not a bad thing if you know how to use them all. But if you,
and that's the thing, right? Yeah.
But if you don't,
right,
then it starts to turn into an issue.
Mm-hmm. Like Chris Paul and James Harden worked.
Yeah. Right.
They made it work.
Yeah.
And I think it is possible to make two high volume passers work. Like, look, we're already there calling Andre Drummond a high volume passer. Maybe we should slow down just a little bit. Like, yeah, I mean, I get what the progression is amazing, but we also have to acknowledge that Blake as a passer is superior until further notice.
Yeah,
I mean, he's fantastic.
Yep.
So I don't mind the ball going through his hands a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want it to come at the expense of Drummond, who is just standing idly by.
Yeah.
That's not what's going to work here. What's going to work is those two operating in different space and understanding how they move and how they find each other. The big problem there, though, is the fact that Andre Drummond can't shoot.
Yeah.
That's just a problem because I'm going to go back to my Chicago days with Carlos Boozer and Joakim Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Both of whom, great passers. Mm-hmm. Great, great passers. Joakim had to take on this additional passing role because he could not shoot. And Boozer had to move more and more out of the post,
mm-hmm,
and take these 20-footers and 18-footers a whole lot more just to space the offense more. And it didn't always work because then when Boozer had himself going in the post, he couldn't just kick it out to Joe to shoot it. Like when, yeah, he got double-teamed, Boozer would always pass the ball well and all that. But if the ball found itself to an open Joakim Noah, that would be a waste of possession.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a cap on that potential from those two because Andre simply can't shoot. And that's a problem. And they need to figure out how to do it. Maybe they go high-low. Maybe it's a pick-and-roll with Reggie Jackson and Blake. And Blake gets the ball at the foul line. And then he makes like an alley-oop pass for Drummond, who's underneath the basket. Like, it has to be in concert with the point guard, I feel.
Yeah.
And also, by God, Stan Van Gundy, get more shooters in there.
Well, they could have had Donovan Mitchell. But instead,
a lot of teams could, Brian, but they didn't listen to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Pistons were right before, and then they took Luke Kennard instead of Donovan.
Well, Luke Kennard can shoot.
Yeah.
He can't shoot. He's just...
So can Donovan. Yeah.
He can.
Yeah. No, can. No, I know. I don't want to make fun of Luke Kennard, because, yeah, he, in theory, right, if you were trying to just get, like, a spot-up three guy rather than a guy who can put up 20 points a game, then, yeah, Luke Kennard's your guy, but... That pick does not look as good in retrospect,
no,
given all that has gone on with Mitchell this season. But Mort, you alluded to the point guard. You know, again, Reggie Jackson missed a bunch of time this year. He's only played 38 games heading into Friday. They were, I think, 19-14 when he went down, and then they kind of just tailspin ever since. Do you think he would have made that much of a difference
if 2015-2016 version of Reggie Jackson was on the team? Yes, he would have. But last year's version, this year's version has not been super impressive, I feel.
Yeah.
He's been kind of hesitant, a little bit more, I don't know if I want to say laid back, but he does seem less aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that 2 years ago he was a more assertive scorer, and he was really trying to break through as one of the lead NBA point guards. Like when he was traded to Detroit in the 27 games after the trade in that first season there, he was averaging 17.5, almost 5 boards and 9 assists. Mm-hmm. Like he was really doing damage. And next year he stepped it up scoring wise, averaging almost 19 points and over 6 assists, and started shooting a little bit more from downtown and got a little bit more to the foul line. Like he was turning in to a complete player. And then suddenly that chase or whatever it was, just went away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what happened.
I mean, I think it just could be the injuries. Like, he just isn't totally confident in his body yet. And, like, maybe it just takes a year of him staying healthy for him to get back to that point.
But he's going to be 28.
I know.
He is going to be 28, like, next month.
Yeah. I know. It sucks. Like, I think he would have made a difference, obviously, because, you know, not having to rely on the likes of Ish Smith would make a difference if you are competing for a playoff spot, and same with Langston Galloway, etc. But I still, like, I just don't know. I mean, they feel very similar to me to the Hornets, like maybe in a little bit better spot, just because least they have, like, they're capped out like the Hornets. I mean, they're almost $112 million, but at least they're the three highest paid players on the team are all good to great, or they can be good to great. Whereas, like, you know, Nick Batum for that much money was ill advised. But
they should merge.
Yeah. I like that plan. But barring that one time exception for the NBA, what do you think? I mean, what do you see them doing? Like, how do you see them improving this year? Because they traded their first round pick to the Clippers in the Blake Griffin deal, so they have the mid-level exception, but that's it. Like, is there any one guy who can turn this thing around?
Isaiah Thomas.
I
wouldn't hate it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't hate it.
No, that's actually interesting.
I will say this, though. This is why I hate cap space. This is why I don't ever go the cap space route or the big money contract. Like, we've talked about this at length, and even we closed last podcast with it, like when we talked about Quinn Cook, where I said I would rather get one of those guys up for cheap than spend big money on some dude who has a big name who might not be as good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so many teams are still wrapped up in this idea.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, look, and a lot of teams are going, oh, but we need to hit the cap floor. Honestly, no, you don't.
Not at all.
There's no penalty for not doing it outside of having to pay the difference
to your team.
That's it. You have to your own team. Right, there's
actually incentive to not hit the cap floor. Like, if you're a shitty team,
exactly,
fall below so you can give more money to your players and make them, like, feel rewarded. And, you know, like, if I'm on a shitty team, I would much rather my team be $10 million below the floor. I'm going to pocket, like, close to an extra million than them spending, like, $8 million on, you know, random, like, Jameer Nelson out of nowhere.
Like, right. And that's my point. When you cap out, like, you have to go into this kind of pseudo win out mode, even though you know that you have no chance in hell to break through.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do it because, well, we spent that money.
Yep.
And now we're committed to spending more. And then that cycle just continues, because then you're a capped out team. You go out and you sign, like, a guy to the mid-level exception. Well, that contract is on your books as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 3 years later, you signed X amount of mid-level exception players, and your cap is just gone to shit, and you can't do anything, and then you have to give up draft picks to get out of the major deals, which takes you back an additional 3 years in development, and before you know it, oh, you're the Knicks or the Timberwolves, who haven't been in the playoffs since 2004.
Right.
So I just want to see Detroit and Charlotte, obviously, play it smart.
Yeah.
Like, go after those guys. It's like Quinn Cook right there.
Yeah.
All the time. Those type of players are there.
Yep. We mentioned him last episode too, but Ty Wallace as well.
Ty Wallace, and Seth Curry 2 years ago.
Right.
Like, value deals, and also guys who are young. Mm-hmm. And if that person is young and can shoot and or is athletic, dude, and is cheap, go for it.
Right.
Like, there's no reason to say, oh, well, we're going to sign some 36-year-old overweight point guard because hashtag experience. No.
Right.
No, that's not how you do things. That's not how things work.
You're saying it was a bad idea for the Pistons to hard cap themselves this summer by agreeing to sign Langston Galloway on the first day of free agency?
Yeah. Oh, God, was that unfair?
Yeah,
it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was atrocious.
Oh, Stan.
Yeah.
Baby.
Right.
Sweetheart.
Yeah.
That's not good.
If nothing else, if the Pistons don't hire a real GM or like take those duties away from Stan this summer, they go in nowhere.
Stan, I'm right here, buddy.
Yeah.
I right. don't have a green card. I'll work that up. Yeah. It's half a mil for an NBA team to actually get a green card for someone. It's half a mil. I'll promise you. I'm going to be the no guy, okay? Whenever you get an idea that's really, really dumb, I'll be the guy sitting there with pizza in my mouth and cake in my hair. Go, no.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. All right, let's wrap things up with our crushes of the week, of, I guess, technically the last couple days, but who you got?
Mm. Well, I felt kind of forced.
Yeah.
For my crush. You told me, like, you just pulled rank and went, well, you take this guy.
One of us had and, to.
Yeah, and I'll guess I'll do it when you score 56 points. It's okay. But I did find a different argument for why I went, with Karl-Anthony Towns. I did not realize until today that he was shooting this well from behind the arc.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was above 40, but I thought it was like 40.1, something like that. So just barely 40.
Yep.
He's shooting almost 44% from behind the arc, and he's doing that on 3.5 attempts a game. Like, that seems low, but for a center, that's completely fair.
Yeah.
And like, his efficiency is just amazing. He's got a true shooting percentage of almost 65. And I can't help but escape this feeling, Brian, that he's going to be like this Kevin Durant-type efficiency guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
in the next coming years.
He's close to the 50-40-90 club already. He's with a little, a slight boost in free throws, and he's right there.
And he's going to make it one day. Like, he's probably going to do it.
Yep. I mean, he is their best, in terms of efficiency, he is the Timberwolves' best three-point shooter this year. Like, that's wild.
That can be both a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
I mean, it's a good thing for him. It's a terrible thing for their roster construction. Right.
But I, you know, on the subject of Towns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Towns is averaging 14.2 shot attempts per game. That's just 0.1 more than in his rookie season. Like, he was at 18 last year.
Uh-huh.
Now, I understand that you need to incorporate Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
But Butler himself isn't one of those guys who goes out and takes 27 shots a game. You know,
yeah.
he was at 15.8, like under 16. That's very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find a way to get Towns more shots, and obviously, I'm looking, and this is like a daily segment.
It's a running,
It's a running thing. But can we agree that the last guy to lead the Wolves in field goal attempts should be Andrew Wiggins?
Yes. Yes, we can.
15.9 just barely beats out Jimmy, but that's so dumb. For a smart coach, usually,
mm-hmm.
that's not good planning. That's not where you want the ball to go.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on there?
Tibbs is going
on.
I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be really interesting to see that Minnesota team in the playoffs, because, like, on paper, they have the roster that could possibly even match up well against Golden State, but because Tibbs has killed his team in terms of minutes, and also I just have no faith in their, as you said, their shot distribution, that I am firmly expecting them to get knocked out in the first round, but like, they could be a surprise.
Yeah, but next year, right?
Yeah.
Because they're not gonna
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they could miss it.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. Well, you mentioned Kevin Durant in that Carl Anthony Towns shout out. I've got to shout out Kevin Durant, and no, not because of his on-court play. I was happy to see him come back Thursday night, even though it was short-lived because he called the referee something that cannot be printed on any major website.
But it can be said, he called him a bitch-ass motherfucker, yeah. Which... I gotta give it to KD at least. That's got some oomph to it. Yep. Like that's the Samuel L. Jackson line right there.
He earned his ejection. I'll say that much.
He did. Yeah.
But I'm shouting him out instead because of the rant he gave on the Bill Simmons podcast this week. And I quote, "All your blog boys and your fanboys that's gonna use everything I say and create an article, watch a basketball game. How about you write that? I just want to say that because all these guys are going to write articles and get real mad about what I said tonight. They're going to put their emotions into it. It's not about you. Watch a basketball game. Enjoy the game. Stop worrying about me so much. I just wanted to say that."
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Like, why is KD so in his feelings? He won a ring. He's a former MVP. Like, just, you know, his Twitter bio for years was like, "I'm me, I do me, and I chill." That's not chill. Like, that's the opposite of chill.
So, this is interesting. Because in order to be a successful NBA player, you need to have confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have serious amounts of it. And if you're going to be a superstar, you have to believe that every shot you put up is going to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And every guy you go to guard, you lock them down. Mm-hmm. It has to take a very special kind of human, actually, to be able to find success in the NBA. KD has somehow managed to be the most insecure, confidence-filled man out there. It's really counterintuitive, but it seems to be working for him. I'm not sure what it is. I really am not. But this guy is just so frightened of something.
Yeah.
That I don't know what it is. And I kind of feel bad for him because it seems like this is in his head now. Like,
right.
A lot. And so if KD is listening to this, I just want to say, yo, I mean, none of us are like going at you.
Yeah.
Quite the contrary. Like, if you read the blogs and if you listen to the podcast, which I totally understand if you don't, most people are kissing your ass right. Because you are owning the advanced metrics game anyway, and we are watching your games. We are looking at a guy who can lock up five positions and shoot from beyond half court, more or less. Like, who are these haters? Like, one out of every 100? Sorry, like, that's not the vast majority.
Right. Like, if anything, the bloggers were the ones who were calling attention to his defense in the finals last year as being, like...
Exactly.
Possibly more standout than his offense, which is already elite. Like, we're the ones who are like, hey, he's turned into, like, a monster two-way player. Like, I've seen articles this year plugging him for Defensive Player of the Year. Like,
we talked about him at Defensive Player of the Year, man. Come on,
KD, we're on your side, man. Chill out.
I don't know what's... Yeah, like, I think this guy just reads, like, one bad tweet.
Yeah, like, I'm sure his mentions are just a disaster, but, like, what athlete's mentions aren't, you know? Every athlete's mentions are a disaster. I'm sure he gets it worse because it's like, well, you sold out, you know, you went to Golden State, you were a coward, blah, blah, blah. Like,
OKC
right,
fans.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah,
like...
Yeah.
Just who cares? Just don't. If I was a pro athlete, I would never read my mentions. Or I would have, like, I don't know if it's even possible to do this, but I would have, like, a list of people who can, like, a column of just, like, people who I will get mentions from that I will actually read. But aside from that, I will get mentions from no one. If that's not possible, Twitter, you should really work on that so KD stops being in his feelings so much. But
yeah,
it's weird, man. It's really weird. It's going to be, it's like, that's, we were talking about the panic meter for the top contenders last episode, and we mentioned the health for the Warriors, obviously, is the big issue, but, like, between Dre and KD, that's a lot of, like, what if, you
emotions.
Know, yeah, like, what if one of those guys gets tossed again in a playoff game? Like, that's at least in the back of your mind, given
it
what
is.
Happened with KD, or, sorry, with Dre 2 years ago in the finals.
Right. And, you know, a different thing is in my mind as well. I'm just thinking, thank God Gary Payton isn't in his prime and is in the league right now. He would make both of those guys cry by halftime.
Yeah, well said, well said. I think that's the perfect place to wrap up, Mort. So thank you, everyone, for listening to us today and for sticking with us through FanRag all the years. A reminder, if you want to stay in tune moving forward, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. We will post every new episode there. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well, because we tweet out all of the episodes too. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And reminder, we are moving to the Almighty Baller Podcast Network starting next episode. So, Mort, where can they subscribe if they're an Android user?
Pocket Cast, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and basically if you're on an Android device and you're going to Google Play and you search podcast player or podcast, something will pop up and we'll be there because I've entered our RSS feed into virtually every app there is. And, you know, Almighty Baller Network is a podcast network, so it wouldn't even surprise me if we ended up on services that I don't even know about yet. Mm-hmm. So we should be able to be found. And while we've got your attention regarding the pod as well, if you guys would be interested in like a mailbag episode coming out with, you know, some frequency, like a mailbag once every month or something, like hit up on Twitter and tell us like, yeah, I want to do that. Like, I want to get my question there. Like that's fine. We really want to dig it. We want to get people involved. So hit us up on Twitter and Facebook or whatever, where you can find us.
Yes, well said. And yeah, stick with us. We got a lot of good stuff coming up as we get through the end of the regular season and then hit really from April through the beginning of July. We're just going to be full speed ahead the whole time. So then, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Next time we talk, I'll be 32 and miserable.
Oh, exciting. Well, it's not. We'll get an update on how that goes. But happy early birthday, bud.
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to having lost all my hair in a couple of days.
Well, then you can't
no more kicking.
Yeah, you can't get kicked. So that's good. All right. Later, Mort.
Later.